History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts.
It's time now to go beyond the headlines. And for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Well, there's good news and bad news. The bad news is I'm sick and I don't feel great. Which is why I'm not in the studio today. I am at the home studio because I'm not trying to get people sick, man.
Thank you, like, Kyle.
Honestly, I'm going to be really vulnerable and honest with people right now. Pre-pandemic, I probably would have gone to work today.
Okay.
Like, just not recognizing the potential like danger. Danger is probably strong, but just I don't know. I just don't want to get people sick, man.
Okay.
And so last night I wasn't feeling great. I woke up this morning. It was like 5 o'clock and went, nope, I'm not. This is bad. It was one of those. I have the flu. A COVID negative. That's the good news. Salute. Yeah, it was like, it was that body hot to the touch, but also freezing cold.
Oh, that's the worst.
Get enough blankets to go to sleep. It's just brutal. So we're working through that. Appreciate Jesse for hopping in and, helping out so I could be here from home and we could have a show.
Glad I get to play radio with you guys today.
Yeah,
you're glad you what?
I get to play radio with you guys today.
Yeah, man.
This ain't a job, dude. We're out here playing radio with our friends. That's all it is.
Just vibing. Yeah.
And it's been a little while. Outside of, you know, the handoffs, you know, doing mad props. It's been a little while.
Oh yeah. True.
Outside of Jesse taking it up the middle.
Nope. Damn it, James. It's a flag.
Oh my God. All right. So, let's talk All-Star weekend. It's never going to be the same, man. It's just not, it's not the same event that it was 30 years ago. And I think expecting it to be that, if that's your goal, we're going to be disappointed forever. I think we need to start adjusting our expectations for what NBA All-Star Weekend is and is going to be. Because every year we do the same thing. Every year we watch it. Every year we go, wow, this is nothing like Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant. And man, those guys tried so hard. It's never going to be that again, man.
Okay.
Go ahead.
The basketball itself, I was okay with. The basketball itself, like the format was intriguing. You know, the OGs beat the young guys, like sort of the process worked to get sort of the best two teams, the best, you know, 10 players or 8 players, whatever their teams were broken up into on the court at the end. I think all of that worked and the competitive level, but it was like the most boring, dragged out, but self-indulgent by TNT, that's what it like really felt like, so self-indulgent. Like, what are we doing here? Like, this is not, we're not going to sit here and slow play out the death of TNT for the next like 3 months, are we?
We are.
I guess
that's
we are.
What's happening.
But I was shocked by the way that it was just like so overly produced and at the same time, not produced well enough, you know, so that's where it was like,
oh, it was overly produced in the wrong ways.
Well, Inside the NBA is not even dying, right? They're just going to be showing it on ESPN from now
right,
on.
Right, dude, that is what, if you wanted to do that whole little thing with Gone Fishing for Inside the NBA or whatever, that's fine. You can do that before the game. You can do it after the game. But doing it in the middle of the final game?
Yeah.
Where, like, the guys were trying. The players were trying early in that game.
Yep.
Because the league got what it wanted. It's like, hey, target score of 40. You have to run around for 12-ish minutes. Go be competitive. And they were. And then they stopped the game for like 12 minutes or whatever it was to do that?
Yeah, it was like the clock malfunction in New Orleans.
Dude, seriously, put on purpose.
Yes.
And so you saw the players like visibly frustrated. And by the time they came back, they're like, screw this. And that's what's so frustrating for me is the NBA and Adam Silver want so badly for the All-Star game to be about the basketball. You have to try. You have to show out for fans. That's what this is for. The 200 points is unacceptable because we got to try. We got to be competitive. And then you do everything you can during the games to make it not about the games. You're going to stop it for this Mr. Beast challenge, which pause on that real quick. That kid sitting in the bucket of money or in that like vat of money.
Yep.
Disgusting. You have no idea where those bills have been.
He's probably in the same situation you are this morning, Kyle.
Worth it, though.
Dude, totally. Not begrudging the guy. It's just like, you're going to have to use that money. That's a superhero villain origin story waiting to happen. just that cesspool of whatever is in that. But anyways, I digress. But yeah, stopping the games for that. Like, that was a fun thing. But do that before the games. Do that on Saturday.
Hey,
don't do that during the All-Star games.
I can't imagine allowing Kevin Hart to interrupt the great Ernie Johnson in the middle of an opening. I was just I just want to shut the TV off right then. Like, what are we doing here? What are we doing?
Look, this is not an anti-Kevin Hart thing.
No.
I'm sure that there are people. Is he my favorite comedian? No. Is he my least favorite comedian? Not by a long shot. But why are we still doing the Kevin Hart thing?
Yeah.
Why? I don't. It's like, I don't know who is James. Let me ask you this: who is the All-Star Game for? Who are they trying to appeal to?
It should be for kids. That's who it should be. It should be to bring in new fans, to allow people to see players that they don't get to see all the time, and to see their guy represent their team and hang out with cool people. I think that's what the All-Star Game is for. It's for bringing in, like, who goes to All-Star Games is usually, like, very rich people and people with kids that sit way up high, and they're there to watch the game.
Yep.
Kevin Hart had his moment with Draymond Green, that three-point contest in 2016, and they're still bringing him back. It's been 8 years, and you're still bringing him back. Yes, that was 2016 when that happened.
God, dude. And he's just there. He's just around, and it feels like too much. And James, you hit the nail on the head. It was like overproduced in all the wrong areas. I think there's potential with this format, where if on Sunday you do your pregame stuff, you do all that stuff, there's the pregame shoot around or whatever, and there's all the interviews and all that. But then, like, once the games start, it's like players sit courtside or right there. They watch the first game. All right, second game's up. Okay, that one's over. Let's get to the championship game. And maybe do a third place game or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The two losing teams battle. Just do something to add more basketball. And it was 33 minutes of basketball in a 3-hour television broadcast.
Yes.
You have to up the target score, let's call it 50, and find a way to tack in more games. That's the bottom line for me.
I totally agree. And then, Kyle, the other thing is, I believe as part of the first game, they allowed Kevin Hart's mic to be hot in the stadium. And so he's sitting there clowning players, like, during the game, yelling at coaches to go have their big man stand in the post, not to shoot threes. But it's like interrupting the entire flow of everything. I was shocked by that. And then the other thing I was shocked by was every time, for some reason, they decided to invite Draymond Green, and he literally just took a flamethrower to the entire league. Every time they let him on the broadcast.
This sucks.
Like, what is happening?
And then goes and guarantees a championship.
And guarantees a championship for his 10th-seeded Golden State Warriors.
Just writing checks that Steph's going to have to cash.
Steph's leaving the All-Star game. Hey, yeah, so Draymond kind of guaranteed a championship, so we're going to need you to get to work now.
Yeah.
Damn it, Draymond. I get it. We're talking about it. That's why they have him there. But, yeah, I don't... I don't know that they necessarily want Draymond Green going out there and tossing napalm on the entire weekend.
The entire thing.
Did the players, like, obviously there's, like, it wasn't great this weekend, but did the players kind of force the NBA's hand as far as, like, we had basketball before and it's been horrible, like, watching these guys play? Like, maybe the NBA felt like they had to do something different this year?
Yes. I do. I think the players lack a competitiveness. And like, if you're going to do it that way, if you're just going to run up the score and just make it like the Harlem Globetrotters, at least if you're going to do that, that's fine. But bring in a bigger group of dudes. Like, make it a 15-man roster on each side, whatever, and just make it, like, a lot more fun and crazy stuff and all that stuff. But, like, to have it be, like, 180 to 190-something, that's not a competitive game. No one's, I mean, they're playing defense like the Sacramento Kings, you know, like in a regular season game, and you're just sitting there watching it unfold the whole time, like, oh, this isn't great. But I thought the competitiveness of the small games actually worked. It did.
I agree.
But I don't know how you rescue the rest of it and why we're doing tribute videos before and during and after for TNT.
It's like they have to make the games the main thing on Sunday. Friday night, you can do whatever. Saturday night, you can do whatever. But by the time the games roll around on Sunday, that just has to be the marquee part of it.
Mm-hmm.
It can't be a continuation of, and I'm not going to call for the NBA to like decorporatize the All-Star weekend, because they're not going to. That's just
just
printing money all weekend.
It's a cash cow. Yes.
Yeah, man. So I'm not going to, because that's just unrealistic. But like, by Sunday, can we get rid of some of that and just get to the actual games themselves?
Mm-hmm.
And I agree a little bit with what Jesse said in that players kind of force the NBA's hand here. But they created this new format to drive up competitiveness and then still like put in elements for the games that like they were worried it wouldn't be competitive. So they wanted to do all this extra stuff to try and distract from the basketball.
Yeah.
It's like, you got to give them a chance first. You did this whole new format. I think it's a great idea. The other tweak I would make is go 28 All-Stars and 7 teams of 4. Okay. I don't think I loved the Rising Stars dudes getting in.
Yeah.
That's a small nitpick for me. I'm not saying that's the biggest issue they had.
I agree. I think being part of All-Star Weekend is enough for young players. Like, if you're going to get to play on the big stage, that kind of, it does take away. And especially if they would have won. Like, if somehow they would have won and you're like, oh no, like, you know what happens? Like, the Stars just got punked by the Rising Star guys who, you know, again, aren't even all the Rising Stars. They're, you know, the winner of a group, so that you don't even have the best of the best there. Yeah, it was a weird day. But, you know, at the same time, I think NBA was the talk of everything this weekend. You know, it's a 3-day weekend for most people. It just kind of played out the whole weekend. And I thought, like, some of the events were cool. I just thought that they could have done a better job of reining it in and of making it a lot like a tighter event where there wasn't all of this fluff and wasted time and all that stuff.
The other thing that set a terrible precedent, I agree with you there. LeBron James tapping out right before the game.
Well, and Anthony Edwards did too.
Right. And Anthony Edwards doing the same thing. I'm going to put Ant to the side here for a second.
Okay.
Because that also sucks. Like, if you think you're too hurt to play, you need to say so and allow somebody else who is going to be able to play
Demonis
to get
Sabonis.
This isn't even a Demonis Sabonis thing.
Yeah, I know.
Because maybe it would have been Norman Powell and Devin Booker. Like, I have no idea. But doing that sucks. The thing with LeBron specifically is LeBron is the face of the league, dude. This is, you want to set a tone for your weekend, and it's LeBron going, I'm not going to suit up tonight. I've got this ankle and foot thing. Like, never mind. I don't want to play.
And it became a big, the story was, he had a chance to make it his 21st All-Star game, and now he's not going to play. It's like, oh, all right.
Yeah, and I don't want to necessarily blame LeBron, because it wouldn't shock me at all if the league was like, hey, you need to be there. Like, we won't bring an injury. You just need to be there. Because if you're saying early that you're hurt and you're not going to show up like that, that's a no-go. It's just that when LeBron taps out before the games, like, that matters. That matters to these players because everybody still looks to LeBron.
Mm-hmm.
Austin Rivers told this story on his podcast when they were getting ready to play the in the pandemic season, and they were trying to decide if they're going to keep the season going or not.
You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing, but the money still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
They had this whole big meeting and all these players are talking, and eventually Udonis Haslem looks at LeBron and goes, what are we doing? Like, we're following you here. And so when LeBron comes out day of the All-Star game and goes, ah, never mind, I'm not going to play, that just sets a bad tone for the entire night.
No, I agree. And I mean, you want to see, like, this could be his last All-Star game. I mean, we don't know what next season, you know, what will happen next season, but it could be his last All-Star game to have him not play. I guess it's his prerogative, but at the same time, like, make your decisions before and don't, like, make it better by saying, hey, but he's okay, he'll play on Wednesday. It's like, okay, so we can't play today, but he can't play on Wednesday? Like, wait, what are we doing here? I don't get it. And did Anthony Edwards get hurt in the buildup? Did he trip over Kevin Hart? Like, what exactly happened? Why can't he play? And, there's just, it was a little weird. It was a little weird.
Very strange, for sure. We're going to squeeze in a little Kings talk today. We're not going to talk about the All-Star game all day, I promise. I'm going to squeeze in a little Kings talk coming up. Are they facing a make-or-break stretch coming out of the All-Star break? We'll talk about that next. He's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. Jesse Tapia riding with us today on The Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube. This is ESPN 1320 at Sacramento Sports Center. All right, James Hamm's there. I'm Kyle Madsen at the home studio today. Jesse Tapia hanging out with us as well. I got into a new sport this weekend.
Oh, no.
Like, I was so... I just needed to watch competition of some sort. And this weekend, and I'm not really a big college basketball guy. Like, I'll throw it on. But pre-tournament, I'm not. Or pre-conference tournaments, really. I'm not watching super close. But Tiger Woods Golf League, the TGL, was on yesterday, and the Bay Area has a team, Bay GC. What's up? They're 3-0. They had a doubleheader yesterday, and dude, it is so fun. I know that golf is a sport to watch, especially if you don't play golf, is pretty boring. Like, it's very slow, it's very plodding. There's not a lot of kind of a boring sport, right?
Yeah.
But the TGL is all indoors. It's team play.
How do you play indoor golf?
You hit it into a simulator.
Oh.
That tracks your ball speed and spin.
Of course.
And they have these fake courses, these like AI, CGI courses. Everything, by the way, that's computerized now is called AI. But he's like these digitized courses, and so the ball then hits, and it shows you wherever it lands on the fairway, and then you hit again off of a little tee box. There's a rough, there's sand, and then there's fairway, and you hit out of whichever one where your ball lands, and then once it lands on the green, there's a green on the opposite side of the arena that a light comes down exactly where your ball hit, and then you set a ball down, and then you chip and you putt on their green, which moves based on the hole.
Okay.
It is incredible. It is such a fun sport.
So as
Shout
somebody
out to the TGL.
As somebody who worked at Copeland Sports for years, I hit in the golf simulator all the time. Like like late at night, that's what we would do. I mean, there was a point where I was hitting probably 200 or 300 balls a night, and you know, so bad that, you know, you start getting tendonitis from hitting the mat. So I enjoyed the simulator. Like going in and hitting, and like, cause we had all the courses, you could play all the different courses. So I'm kind of down with this. Also, as somebody who, worked sporting goods during the Tiger Woods explosion and what he meant for golf is better when Tiger is in it. And when Tiger isn't in it, it really has just kind of died. Like,
1,000%.
I mean, the guy brings in so many people and made it such a globalized sport, but also a sport for everybody, where before it just felt like it wasn't. And I think his ability to make it like an all-inclusive sport, like he changed the game, and like absolutely amazing what he did for the game. So I'm glad that he's in it in some faction, you know, because like he's a superstar. He is their superstar. And when he's out of it, it's, you know, it's just not really as exciting.
Yeah, man. It's this the TGL and the way it's put together, it's all about like pace and excitement. Like there's a crowd and the players are all mic'd up. You can hear them talking to each other. It is just, if you've not gotten to catch it yet, just next time you see that it's on, just watch it for 10 minutes.
Just give it a shot. Yeah.
Dude, I got so locked in this weekend to the point that our house is set up where our kitchen sink, you can see the TV from the kitchen sink. So that's a lot of, you know, I'll be cooking or washing dishes or doing whatever in the kitchen. I can see. I multiple times yesterday did the thing where I stopped what I was doing to go walk around to the other side of the counter and stand in front of the TV to watch what was going on.
Oh,
like, 'cause I really had to lock in.
Okay.
That's a big deal for me. That doesn't always happen. So shout out to the TGL.
I can see you like pulling all the dishes down and just rewashing all the clean dishes, 'cause you're sitting there enthralled by what's happening.
Yeah, just the same plate for 20 minutes.
Hey, why are all of our dishes out? Well, I just decided to clean. I'm going to re-wallpaper the bottom of the shelves. Like, what are you talking
about? Productive.
I'm being productive.
So, yeah. Anyways, that's what I got into yesterday. I didn't realize, as we shift gears to the Sacramento Kings here clumsily, I didn't realize that games start again on Wednesday.
Yeah, but the Kings don't play till Friday. Yeah.
And the Kings don't play till Friday.
Yeah, the Lakers play on Wednesday. They're like, oh, LeBron, you have to play on Wednesday, so go ahead and take the weekend off.
I wonder if that's why he sat out the All-Star game, like out of spite. They're the one team that has to play on Wednesday.
Oh, maybe.
And so he just said, to heck with this.
Yeah.
That wouldn't surprise me.
No. Nope.
Yeah, the Kings don't play till Friday. I was talking with our guy, Matt George, about this yesterday, and I wanted to get your thoughts on it. I think the first 11 games coming out of the break are the make or break stretch for the Kings this year.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean,
the make or break in terms of, can they make a push for a six seed, or are they just kind of a 500 team? I think these next 11 games are going to tell us.
Yeah. I think you can also get fooled into like a false sense of security early on, because it starts with Golden State. Like, I can see them losing to Golden State. I don't know if they'll beat Golden State or not, but Charlotte, Utah, at Houston, at Dallas, at Denver, versus San Antonio, at Lakers, versus Knicks, at Golden State and Phoenix. Those games, you're right. Like, if you don't come out of that four games over, you know, and that would mean that you get, you know, three or four games up early and then go back and forth and stay at 500 throughout that stretch, you're going to have a really, really tough time being anything more than like a 42-43 win team. And it's a tough stretch, but it gets a lot worse after that, because that they still have the monster road trip right after that.
Yeah, right. That's why, like, this is setting up the rest of your year.
Mm-hmm.
Are you giving yourself a little bit of wiggle room to lose a couple, or are you fighting for your life every single night to stay at 500 and stay in the top 10? And they're at 28 and 27 right now. Would you take 7-4 in that stretch?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of have to have 7-4. That would be the four games,
like,
over
minimum. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, that's if you don't hit that, there's a possibility this team's under 500 by the end of the season. So
yes, and yeah, that's so why this is the make or break stretch.
2-3 I'm going to give them 4, 5, 6. 6 with a possibility of a 7th in there. But yeah, I don't know.
So they're at Denver to wrap up a 4-game road trip. Then they come home to face De'Aaron Fox and the Spurs. Then they're at the Clippers, and then home against the Knicks on a back-to-back.
Okay.
And then they get a couple days off. Then they're at Golden State and home against, at Golden State and at Phoenix on a back-to-back.
Okay, so
this is just, man.
Yeah. But see, here's the thing. Like, Golden State, just to be honest, they're not a great team.
Winnable game.
Phoenix isn't a great team. But you start at the beginning. So Charlotte is horrible. They're the worst team in basketball. Second worst team in basketball.
But beat you at Golden One last year.
Yep. Utah is bad. You've beat Houston multiple times this season.
Yep.
Somehow. Dallas is in transition, and you might be able to get them. Denver is pretty much a loss at Denver, especially at the end of a road trip. That Spurs game is pivotal because, I mean, number one, it's going to be like a highly charged night.
It's
going to
be crazy.
Yeah, that's going to be a wild night at Golden One Center with De'Aaron Fox and Wembanyama coming in. But then I think the Clippers are beatable. I don't think you're going to get the Knicks on the second night of a back-to-back. And then those final two games, like if there's some way to go, I don't know. I don't think there is a way to go 8-3 in that stretch. And if you go 8-3, that's five games. So that would put you at six games over 500. That would be really, really difficult to do.
I'd be so shocked if they went 8-3.
Yeah. And I think even, 6-5 is probably more in line with. And I don't think if you survive that stretch at 6-5, that you're going to be okay. Again, taking into consideration the New Orleans game, as opposed to being three games over right now, you're one.
Exactly.
And that would have put you, again, if you go 6-5, that puts you four games over. If you go 7-4, that puts you six games over. That's just a really big difference right now when we're looking at the standing. So it's going to be tough. They have to figure out how to play defense. And that's like the biggest thing. I don't know how they figure out how to play defense with two practices.
Yeah, that gets outside of these next 11. I don't. And when you're trying to find optimism about the Kings, that's why it's really hard for me to do that. Sure, Zach LaVine might start making shots, and Malik Monk might cut down on his turnovers or whatever. You think maybe Keegan Murray starts hitting some threes on whatever you think they need to do offensively, or whatever they need to prove on offensively. I still turn back to the defense of it all, and I know that's the boring take.
Yeah,
but if you can't get stops, that's going to be a problem down the stretch of games, especially in a play-in scenario. Go look at the play-in game last year against Golden State. The Kings offense was fine, but their defense was outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
They were sensational that entire game. And then they went and lost to a team that was just better defensively.
Yeah. Well, and a team that had their number. I mean, really, a team that had their number. I think that's the biggest thing. Yeah, I just keep looking at this, and we can talk about advanced metrics and all that stuff all we want, but the fact is the Kings defensively have just hit the skid so bad that they've dropped all the way to number 20 in the league right now. They were number 13 over their last 10, 15 games. They're just abominable. They cannot play defense at all, and if you can't figure out how to handle one side of the court. And I know we keep hearing this. It doesn't matter who starts and who finishes. You know what, though? It does. It does matter who starts and who finishes. Starting the game, it does matter, because we've seen it too many times in the last 2 weeks where Domantas Sabonis picks up two or three fouls in the first quarter, or the early second quarter. He's got three fouls. And that's because your defense is so bad on the perimeter that they're allowing everybody to jailbreak. Your defense is so bad going up for rebounds that he's picking up fouls trying to rebound. And on top of that, your offense isn't there yet, and he keeps picking up moving screens because guys aren't used to where he's at, and they're rushing to take off and go, to use the screen. And getting him in foul trouble because they're going too early. So there's all of these pieces that are sort of moving that you have to figure out how to tighten up. And that's where, Kyle, we talked about it last week, but I'm more and more leaning towards you got to make a change right now and figure out a way to get Keon Ellis into the starting lineup to open games. Just for the fact that you keep Domantas Sabonis clean as far as fouls as long as possible. And if you can't do that, if you can't keep the pressure off of him, then you have no shot this season. And to me, the only way to do that is to put two defenders on the floor, Keegan Murray and someone else. And the only way to do that, I believe, is put Keon Nelson in the lineup. I don't know what that means for anybody else. Again, we don't coach this team, and you and I both know that there's a good chance that we go to Friday's game and it's going to be the same starting lineup that we've seen. That's not the way it should be. That's fine. You want to keep everybody's feelings intact. That's fine. But if you want to win games, you have to do something dramatic here. And that means you've got to go a different direction with at least one of your starters.
And you have to do it now, man. And I don't disagree with you. Like, if I had to bet money on who the starting lineup is going to be Friday against Golden State, I think it's going to be the same starting five we've seen.
Yep.
But that's a button that you have to push now. You have 27 games to work with. And it's not easy.
Nope.
Like this 11 game stretch coming up is really tough, and the 16 games after that aren't easy either.
Yep.
So this is something to me that you had time off to figure out. You have time off to have conversations that need to be had. Those players that those conversations are had with have time to wrap their brains around it and prepare for the rest of the season. And frankly, if you're going to, I'm just going to say player X, because when you start bringing in specific names into this, people get weird about it. So, actually, to hell with it. You know what? If you tell DeMar DeRozan, hey, you got to come off the bench, gives us the best chance to make a run and to win, is if you're the sixth man, and he can't deal with that. Okay, like that tells me everything I need to know about where DeMar DeRozan and the Kings are, or Malik Monk or Zach LaVine, whoever it is that has to go to the bench, if they can't deal with that. And they aren't all in. Okay, it's good to know for next year.
Yeah, I mean, Kyle, they have to have an honest discussion and then ask someone to raise their hand. Who will come off the bench? Like, and I would just like pull the three guys aside, pull Monk, pull DeRozan, pull Zach LaVine aside, and say, We have got to put Keon Ellis in the starting lineup. Is there one of you before we make the decision ourselves? Because we're going to. Is there one of you guys that would be willing to go back to the bench or go to the bench and help this team in a different way? I don't think you're going to get that. I honestly feel like they're going to walk into the second half with the same exact issues that they've had. And then they're going to try to make changes quicker in the game. So maybe the 5 or 6 minute mark, we're going to see, you know, tinkering with who's coming into the game, who's coming out of the game. I just think this is a tough spot to be in for Doug Christie. And that's why you, as a general manager, as a front office personnel, you make decisions for not just the best player available in trade, but you make decisions for fit, and you make decisions for what will work on the floor. And you already had not only 11 years of Zach LaVine to look at of tape, and 16 years of DeMar DeRozan tape to look at. You also had 3 years of Chicago Bulls tape to look at. And if you didn't look at that and realize that they haven't fit together in the past, I don't know what to tell you. Like, that's part of the job, is to find ways in order to fit players in. And I guess making splashy trades, you know, maybe that's what your owner wanted or what you wanted to do as a general manager. But it's also a good way to have that written on your NBA, you know, general manager tombstone.
No doubt. I want to address something that Brian Cruz said in the chatty house at youtube.com/ESPN1320 and twitch.tv/ESPN1320. Salute to Brian. He said, this is a silly conversation that will not happen until they get a significant losing streak. Cool. Then they're going to be mid.
Yeah.
They're going to be about 500.
Didn't they just have a significant losing streak? They did.
Yep. Yeah.
I mean,
and significant losing streak to me, like, okay, so if you lose two and then win one and then lose three and then win one, that's not a significant losing streak, but it's really clear something needs to happen and something needs to change. And to me, watching this team the last 2 weeks, it's just really clear that something needs to be different.
Oh, yeah.
If not, you're a little bit better than the New Orleans Pelicans.
Yeah, they're going to fool themselves into believing that you know, hey, we just went 3-4 of our last four games. We may have figured some things out. we're going to be able to figure this out. We're going to have a couple of days of practice. They're going to fool themselves into believing that. I personally, that's what I think is going to happen. That they're going to be like, hey, I believe that we can figure this thing out. We can piece it together on the fly. It's like, okay, well, like your 27th defensive rating in the last like 3 weeks. So what are you going to figure out in that much time? Is someone going to get like 4 inches taller and become a shot blocker? Did you work with somebody the entire All-Star weekend to see if they can block shots at a high rate or protect the rim at a high rate? Did somebody like just magically get better lateral quickness? I'm just asking. Like, I don't think that happened.
Just asking questions
over the All-Star break. So,
I don't think it probably did either.
No.
All right. That's James Hammond Comats, and Jesse Tapia is riding with us today. Got a little bit of NFL stuff on the calendar starting today that we'll get into. And the Sacramento A's may only have one manager the entire time they're in existence. We'll talk about that next. James Hamm, I'm Kyle. Jesse Tapia on the ones and twos on ESPN 1320 and Sacramento Sports Center. Sam there. I'm Kyle Madsen at the home studio today. We're COVID negative, though. Salute. That was a big time win for me this morning because, man, when I went to bed last night, I was like, hey, if this is what this is, I'm going to be real upset because there's a Kings game that I would like to go to on Friday. And I was hanging out with my dad yesterday and my mom. So I was like, oh, my God. But we're good.
You don't want to be patient one. Yeah.
No, I've already been down that road. It's the worst. A couple of smaller notes before we get back into some NBA stuff. Starting today at 1 o'clock on the NFL calendar, 1 o'clock PM Pacific time, teams can designate franchise or transition tags for players.
Okay.
I don't think the 49ers or Raiders are going to extend any franchise tags. I'd be pretty surprised. The Niners just don't have any players worth the money that it would take to franchise them, because a franchise tag is a 1 year fully guaranteed deal at an average of the top, I think it's 5 salaries at the position. So it can get a little pricey, and it works for a player like T. Higgins. The Bengals franchise tagged him because, okay, you get him at 1 year, you can kick his extension down the road, and you're paying him, you know, on an average annual value basis, not a ton this year. But I don't expect the Niners or Raiders to tag anybody. Okay. Like Talano Hufanga is not worth that for the Niners. Dre Greenlaw is not. Traverius Ward is not. So I don't think we'll see any news on that front.
Okay.
But it is a deadline or a date trying to keep up with what's going on in the NFL. The franchise tag is kind of interesting though, because it is a key point of leverage in the 49ers talks with Brock Purdy. Like, I think they want to get a long-term deal done. I don't think they want to mess around with play out this year, and then we'll franchise tag you, and we'll see where we're at. Like, I don't think that's a good precedent for them to set, and we've talked about this before. But, like, when they get the deal done matters almost more than how much it costs.
Okay.
And I think you set such a bad standard or precedent if you go into this year and Brock Purdy does not have a new contract.
Oh, I totally agree.
That's just so it is. There's just, I don't think it's going to happen. But if Brock and his agent are on some astronomical number, that's what the Niners are going to look at. And they're going to go, well, you could play out this year, and then we can franchise tag you for way less than that and figure out your extension in a couple of years.
Yeah. Well, I think the Brock Purdy thing is interesting because I think we're all just hoping that they do the right thing and just get the deal done. Like, I mean, if it's going to cost an extra couple of million now to get it done today versus waiting and waiting and waiting, you just have to get it done. This is such a huge astronomical number that's going to fall onto their books that I don't think a couple of million here or there are really going to matter. And you just have to get the deal done and hope that you do the right thing and hope that he lives up to the contract.
Yeah. Like that's just it. Like, he's going to get paid, man. Whether you think he should or not, like, he's going to. So,
yeah, I totally agree.
We'll
whether
see
it's you or someone else, and it's not like you got someone else lined up to fill the void left by what that would be.
Exactly.
Yeah, tough look.
Other smaller news: the A's extended Mark Kotze over the weekend.
Yeah,
signed him through 2028. I think this is good as they try and find some stability. Bob Melvin was obviously there for a long time, but man, it was just really clear when you and I were down at the Sawyer talking to some of the players before they left for spring training, how much they all like Mark Kotze.
Yeah, he's like
they ride with him.
Yeah, he's like the old ball coach, you know, like he's been in the organization or around this group forever. And I think he's the right guy to sort of usher them into this new, like, really difficult phase. I think that, you know, we saw the players at the Sawyer, like, last month or the month before, right? And they're embracing the experience of being here in Sacramento. And to have Mark Kotze get this three-year extension, which puts him in Sacramento the entire time that the team is allegedly going to be here, might be longer, is a good thing because he wants to build something. He is an A. He has pride in wearing green and gold and what, you know, the franchise means to him, even if it's in a different location. And as someone who went through multiple relocation sagas, having somebody to lead the players during that time is a big deal. Like his connection to the players, his ability to say, hey, look, this is what's happening. Everybody else calm down. We got this, that kind of stuff. It's going to mean something because stability means everything when everything else around you is unstable. And that's what the A's are, the Sacramento A's, the whatever you want to call them. It's a total, you know, mess of a franchise that's in the middle of a complete upheaval where they're moving to a temporary stadium for 3 years and maybe longer. And then they might move to Las Vegas or they might not. And like that, if you're a young player and your job is to focus on 162 days of baseball every year, like little tiny distractions like this can, well, little tiny distractions can set you off, but massive distractions, having somebody walk into your clubhouse and start asking questions about this stuff, it can really, really set you off and put you in a bad frame of mind when you got a job to do. And so having somebody that you can rely on to be the voice of reason for the players is going to be, for me, it's going to be huge.
And just establishing a culture where if you help oversee, what was it, a 19-game improvement from a couple years ago?
Yeah.
Like, that should be rewarded. So, shout out to the A's for extending Mark Kotze, who should be the only manager of the Sacramento A's. And I'm making just, I'm on the fly here. We're just going to do that.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, I
think
that's
what we're going to call them, the Sacramento A's.
I've felt that too. Like, that's what we're going to do. From here on out, we're just going to call them the Sacramento A's, even if someone gets mad at us.
It's not to be disrespectful to them, it's not out of spite. It's just really difficult when you're talking about a sports team that has a city and a name attached to it. Like, you're going to alternate between the two. You sometimes say the A's. Sometimes you say Sacramento. Sometimes you say the 49ers. Sometimes you say San Francisco. Sometimes you say the Raiders. Sometimes you say Las Vegas.
Yeah, as writers, we have to find new ways to say it.
Right. The green and gold.
Yeah.
Like, there's, sure, the Athletics. There's all these different... I don't want to have to try and dance around not having a city to say. They play in Sacramento. They're going to be in Sacramento for the next 3, 4, maybe 5 years. They're going to be the Sacramento A's.
Yes.
On this show. And in the San Francisco Chronicle.
That's it. We're using them as like our beacon of like, the right thing to do. Like, in all honesty.
It is. And do you know how ridiculous it looks on MLB schedules? When the A's are on the schedule, it just says ATH.
Yeah.
That looks dumb.
It does.
It's like Athens.
Athens, anyway. Georgia. Do they play there? Hey, you never know.
I think there's a minor league team in Athens.
Yeah.
I think.
Probably. We'll have to ask Ali and see if he has the minor league hat from Athens, Georgia.
For sure. One other thing, some NBA news that's not really news. Howard Beck, who is on the Real Ones podcast with Sacramento legend Logan Murdoch and Raja Bell. And I was at their live show this weekend. Had a great time, by the way, out at the Punchline in San Francisco. And Howard Beck was talking about how there's like these things you just kind of hear and with player movement and stuff. And he's like, but I can't, like, I don't have it on, like, I don't want to say it here. And then gets bullied into saying it. And he's like, okay, I don't want to say this because aggregators are going to grab it. And I don't want aggregators to grab it because I'm not reporting it. But I talked to a lot of executives around the league, and some executive out of the blue the other day just said, like, don't be surprised if John Morant is the next big name to move. And it immediately got aggregated. it's all over the internet now that John Morant's going to get traded, according to Howard Beck.
I think it's interesting you were there for the moment. That's fun to be there for the moment when it happens, right?
Dude, and it was, as he's saying this, as he's like, well, okay, I don't want to, okay, fine, I'll say it, but like, don't aggregate. I'm like, you're a host. Whatever you're about to say is not going to go well for you.
Yeah, Howard's going to have some self-awareness there. Like, you know how the game is played, pal.
Well, yeah, and I think he knew 1,000%. This is not an anti-Howard Beck thing, by the way. He knew in that moment, okay, he slipped up by saying, I don't want to say this. I can't say this, because now everybody's like, wait, what is it? It's the same thing when James is like, yeah, I heard this thing, but like, I can't really. It's like, okay, well, not like, who's it involve? What is it?
Well, that in like, Howard's done this for too long, and Howard's too good at what he does, like, to know that that's not going to get aggregated and picked up and you know, become like a huge story. Like, again,
he totally knew.
Yeah, I mean, Howard Beck is the president of the Pro Basketball Writers Association, and he's been doing this forever. He also is a UC Davis guy, so go Aggies. I don't know why you put it out there, but again, this is like this fine line that we dance as reporters, where you know something to be true, but whether you're going to report it because you're unsure about the sources or you're not comfortable, whatever it might be, that's where there's so many things that we know that we can't report. And sometimes you do let things slip that you probably shouldn't have, just because you've known it for so long and become comfortable with the idea of what that story is, and you've also checked a bunch of sources, but you also sometimes you feel like it's not your story to tell. And for him to do that, it is what it is. Like, you know, again, Howard doesn't need to get famous, it's one of those moments where he's probably going to look back on and like regret slightly.
A little bit of peer pressure goes a long way.
Yeah, definitely.
1,000%, dude. He knew the minute.
Especially at the live show, we're feeling good.
Moment.
Yeah.
Oh, felt so bad for him in the moment. It's like, oh, this is going to go bad, Howard.
What are you doing, Howard? What are you doing? Don't let Logan Murdoch talk you into something.
Well, I don't know if it was Logan as much as it was Roger Bell. Roger Bell's scary, dude.
Oh, all right.
No? Okay.
Well, yeah.
He's a tough guy. I'm trying to get this tweet to load. We're talking about journalism. And a columnist out of Miami said one of the most insane things I've ever seen in my life
on
the internet yesterday. Okay, I can't get this to load up right now, but we have to step aside for a second anyways. So we're going to do that while I go find this tweet, and we'll continue this conversation coming up next on The Insider. Second hour coming up. He's James. I'm Kyle. Jesse Tapia hanging out with us today. We're sponsored by Jiffy Lube. It's ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Leader.
Hey, y'all. Poodle and Maddie here from Reality Gaze. Grab your favorite thong, because for the first time, we're heading to the villa for the new season of Love Island USA.
I can't wait to watch Ariana babysit these shiny, oiled-up adults who I'm pretty sure aren't there for the right reasons.
From the home-wrecking bombshells to the absolute wreckage of movie night.
Pull up a daybed and join us every Wednesday for all the Love Island USA drama.
Find Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcasts.